This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Welcome in, welcome in. The Bite Me podcast is on the air, and we've got a huge week for fishermen all up and down the Gulf Coast. Huge. Where do we start? We got your questions coming up, of course, on all things, including a really good one for people maybe with bad backs, bad knees, whatever it may be, that want to find an alternative to wade fishing that is close to as good as wade fishing. We're talking about trout spawns. We're going to talk about rollover pass. I am just going to just pass the mic to my guys on that. I'm not a big rollover pass expert, but we got the people here for you. And of course, we've got an update. We always like to stay right on top topic here. Update on the trout regulations that you've got. Let me start with this first of all. Captain Scott Null is one of the guys I was just talking about. You should know him. If you don't know him, what's wrong with you? He's been fishing for decades and is just one of the best of the best, especially fly fishing and certainly tarpon fishing when the months allow. We got Captain Caleb McCumber across from us. He's buying things on Amazon as we speak. We've got it going on for you. This is the Bite Me podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Wherever you get your podcasts, don't forget to join the Bite Me group page, which is definitely going to be where you can get the questions for us the best, and you can get them the easiest, I should say. And we got an Instagram post. I might even have to post something on our Instagram to make sure you guys get active on that. And of course, you can reach Captain Caleb TV at Captain Caleb TV on YouTube. It's awesome. He's got subscribers coming out the kazoo. ScottNullPhotography.com. You can get his great outdoors and wildlife pictures and get some Bite Me gear while you're at it. Pick up a hat, a buff, a shirt, whatever. Stickers are real popular. Pick up some of those. But let's start blowing and going here, guys, because I'll start with the boat show because it ties in with one of the questions we got this week. For the boat show, we're going to have Captain Caleb and myself, and I think my guy Scott's going to try to get out there as well. We will be there on Thursday. So this podcast posts on Wednesday. You can come see us tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at, by the way, in case you guys didn't know, at NRG is where the boat show is this year at NRG. That's an inside joke for those who listen to the podcast every week. But let's tie it in. I know you guys have some thoughts on the boat show in general, because it is one of those times. Scott, I'll start with you, but it ties in with one of the questions that we didn't get to last week. Wanted flat out our suggestions on small boats for non-poling fish, the non-poling fishing category. And he gave the example Chiquita versus Baby Cat, Mowdy, Dargle, Sabine, etc. I'll throw it to you, Scott, by just saying, well, you picked a good week to have that question, because the boat show is where you need to go and get all those questions answered.
Yeah, I mean, the only way to really know if a boat fits you is to go run it, you know, go take it out. I've ran, I guess three of those that have been mentioned. All three handle completely different. Just depends on where you fish. If you need something that's going to handle a little bit choppier water, one of those little bitty skinny ones isn't going to be what you want. If you have ways to get around into some backwater and zigzag and cut in and out and stay out of any open water, then those little bitty skinny ones are kind of cool. You know, like mm-hmm. Chiquita and the little Mowdy. As a kid, I always wanted that Mowdy 10. It looked like a piece of plywood with a motor on it. Mm-hmm. And that was a goal of mine for a long time when I was younger. But nowadays, it probably wouldn't suit me real well because I haven't really run one recently. Caleb's probably been on them more than I have as far as I like that baby cat, because I know Robert's been running one. The one thing I will say about those, if you plan to do some drift fishing, get drift socks, because I haven't been on a single one of those yet that drifts straight. You know, the drifts side to side, they all walk. You know, they go back mm-hmm. and forth a little bit. I would imagine, I didn't try it. Honestly, I haven't tried that, but I would put maybe a drift sock off the back end, like right square off the back. And that way you drift with the bow forward, and that would probably make it drift a lot straighter.
How about you, Caleb? The non polling category of small boats. Look, this is it's important because we have a lot of our listeners that are really just kind of getting in to boating, and so it really is an entry level thing that you can do just about everything you can on a bigger boat.
Yeah, I haven't been on a whole lot of these. Like Scott said, I spent a lot of time on a baby cat, and they're pretty neat and they're pretty capable. Scott pretty well hit all the high points, but if you're looking for something to play around in the backwaters, and that's pretty well it, then one of those Chiquita, baby cat, Mouty, et cetera, absolutely. If you're wanting to do more than that, my only suggestion would be maybe look at the 18 footers as well. There's a lot mm-hmm. of good 18 footers out there that you can drift and do a little bit more trout fishing and whatnot out of. But Scott pretty well hit all the high points there. I can vouch for the baby cat personally. I've seen that thing do ridiculous stuff. We've had it offshore. I'm not saying you should take it offshore, but Robert and I do a lot of stuff you probably shouldn't do.
You do? I didn't know, that.
The thing we've learned about the baby cat, and again, I'm not encouraging anyone here, but it's short enough that it goes between the wave spacings. So we really don't get beat up.
That's actually a plus. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's a lot of up and down, but it's not real rough while it's doing it.
Yeah. Let's add that to the boat show discussion here that Caleb and I are going to be at on Thursday. But one thing, and we talked, I think Scott and I, you and I talked about this last year. It's easy to get swept up in the bright lights and the glitter and the momentum and the excitement of buying a new boat. There's kind of a strategy when you get to a boat show of just asking the right questions. What are some of the questions that you definitely want to ask, Scott, and kind of, you know, tempering your own excitement to make sure you get the right boat for you, short of, let's say you've already driven some, but short of taking that boat out on the water straight out of NRG?
Well, first off, when you go in there, that smell of new fiberglass, I mean, they should bottle that. I mean, it's such a cool smell. Yeah, it makes you want to reach for your wallet. Yeah, you start getting excited and wanting to buy something. It's gotten me in trouble several times.
Yes.
But I would say that really, I mean, if you're new at it, it's hard because you don't really know what you're looking for. But if you've been around boats for a good while, you can start looking at hull shapes and get an idea of whether that boat's going to fit what you like to do. Mm-hmm. You know, is it, how wet it's going to be. I mean, I can look at most hulls and tell you that's a wet boat, you know, and by wet, I mean, it's not going to take the chop very well and you're going to get wet. You can also kind of figure out hull slap a little bit. You know, if it's got really straight up and down sides, when you're drifting, it's going to slap a little bit. Look at storage. A lot of times people get all entrenched in these little boats and they get all excited about them. Then they get them, and I see them all the time on the bay. They got a bunch of stuff sitting on the deck. Mm-hmm. When you go to a small boat, you got to think more like a wade fisherman. You know, go light. Don't bring all your stuff. Live wells, if you're into fishing with live bait, make sure that, you know, one of those ice chests that sits on it, it will handle a live well for you. Those are probably the high points of what to look for. One question to ask is, is there a guide that's running this boat anywhere that I can go get a trip with? Mm-hmm. And a lot of manufacturers will have a guide, not necessarily on those small boats. Not a whole lot of guides are going to run those, but you may be able to get with them, and they may have somebody that's kind of semi-pro staff for them.
Yeah.
That lets customers go out and run those boats. That's the only way to truly know. Work on getting a wet ride, you know, a test ride, so that you can dump it in the water, see how easy it is to get on and off the trailer, see how it runs, and weight distribution. There was one many years back that was a small boat like that. If you stood on the back end of it, you were ankle deep in water. If you stood on one of the back corners.
You told me about that.
Yeah, I wasn't very impressed with that. So, when the whole back end of the boat goes underwater because my 200 pounds is standing back there, it's probably not a good idea for me to have it.
Yeah. Caleb, let's size up a little bit now because we got listeners that are going to be looking for those 17 to 21s and 21s to 26s and bigger. You know, you've been in a bunch of boats. We've all been in a bunch of boats, but from your experience, what are some of the things? I mean, Scott hit some great things. Talk to guides, talk to friends that have had different boats that'll give you the absolute, you know, lowdown on what boats they liked, didn't like, what things they liked on certain boats, didn't like on other boats. And my thing, and we've all been to a bunch of boat shows, but when I've gone in with the mindset of I want to find one of these boats, do your research before you walk in there, right?
You know, I really disagree with a lot of what Scott said. The first question you ask when you're looking at a boat should always be how many horses can I put on it?
Oh, Lord.
Of it will just take care of itself.
Yeah. You just skip right over that stuff.
Yeah. But Scott's right about plane. Those guys at the boat show, they're going to have some of their pro staff in there. And what you got to remember is the boats they sell, they work on. So the smaller boat, they probably have a customer that owns that boat. That's a pretty cool guy that'll give you a ride. And on the bigger boats, again, you know, do your research, know what you're looking for. If you're looking for something that goes shallow and it doesn't have a tunnel down the middle of it, probably not for you. If you're looking for something that's smooth and it doesn't have a V on the front of it, probably not for you. You know, that's the basics of it. But again, there's going to be guys standing in those booths, you know, that it's their pro staff, is their job to tell you about the boat. I wouldn't think there would be pro staff guys there that don't run the boat. You know, listen with your eyes wide open though, because, you know, sniff out that guy that's just telling you everything you want to hear. There's that.
Yeah.
You know, I've always stood in the JH booth and I'm bluntly honest in front of the owners, you know. I mean, the truth is there's nothing wrong with the boat whatsoever and you should totally buy one, right? But I've always said the bad stuff about them.
Well, I mean, that's honesty. You know, and by the way, I mentioned Caleb and I are going to be at the boat show. We're going to be at the, did I mention Fishing Tackle Unlimited? That's where we'll be. So you can find us there. Ask Caleb about the JH. You can ask me about the Freedom. I've got the Warrior, as you know. All our friends are going to be there. All our friends are going to be there from the Boatyard. I was texting with JT and Jake from the Boatyard. They have various different brands. They'll shoot you straight. Trust me on that. I think they're going to be there Friday. I think Chet, Scott was talking with Chet today, from Freedom Boats is going to be there. All the boat, Ron Hoover is going to be there. All the dealers is what I'm saying. Ron Hoover is going to be there. You know, just name a dealership, they'll be there. So ask around, have a plan before you get in there. And Caleb, I know you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah. 5:30 to 7 on Thursday, John, and I'll be there at FTU. And you know, John sparked my thinker there whenever he said, you know, talk to Caleb about JH. Here's the honest truth. Any of us that have been in the business long enough to, you know, be at that level with the boat dealers, we've probably ran a bunch of other boats. So ask me about a Showalter, ask me about a Simmons, ask me about a Trans. I'm going to tell you the good stuff about all of them. And that's kind of where I say, listen with your eyes wide open. You know, if you're at X Boat Builder and you say, well, you know, I'm looking at this one. Oh, that one sucks. You know, just this is the one. If they can't tell you the good things about it, then that would kind of throw up a red flag to me.
Well, just for fun, let's go through all the boats that we've driven. I'll start. And I haven't driven as many different brands as you because I've been very loyal to Scout and very loyal to Freedom, but also Kenner. And of course, the traditional John boat. So I've had Kenner, the Scouts, two Scouts, to two or three two Freedoms, and the John boat. What's your list there? Because even if you talk to us at FTU, we'll tell you what we think about all those. What's your list, Caleb?
All right, I'll just list off the stuff I have more than 20 hours of butt time in, yeah?
Okay.
I've had two or three Showalters. I've had three or four JHs. I've ran a lot of Trancat, both the big one and the little one. Ranger bass boats. Don't think we're really into that today. Myac. I've been in all kinds of different Myacs. I mean, the list goes on. I I spend a lot of my time either with somebody or with me, and it's out there. So like I said, I've ran several V-holes. I've ran the Accelerate. I've ran the Magnums, you know, the BHO, the BLS, not BHO. Yeah, HO, LS, you know, they're out there. So like I said, you know, find somebody that's just been in all of them, sit around and talk to them. None of us mind spending our time.
No, not at all. Scott, give me your list.
Oh, Poland Skiffs alone, Mitzi, Maverick HPX, Tunnel, the old Pathfinder Tunnel. Then I went to East Cape with the Fury. I've run the Cayman. I've been on the Vantage quite a bit. Now I'm in the Sabine. All good boats all have their pluses and minuses. You know, that's the thing with boats. Every one of them is a compromise of some kind. There is no perfect boat. That's why there's so many of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you got to, we started this, get one that fits you. All right. So Scott, you and I both got this message. I think you posted something on the group page, and I think it's important because this is posting on Wednesday, the 26th. The Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission is going to vote Thursday, January 27th. So you've got, and we're talking about the they're going to vote on the proposed rule changes for spotted sea trout. I'm reading it right now. To help the stocks recover from the February 2021 freeze. If adopted, these rules will expire August 31st, 2023, and affect the Matagorda Bay, San Antonio Bay, Aransas Bay, Corpus Christi Bay, and upper and lower Laguna Madre systems. So your thoughts on that, and people who want to have some input on this, you have until 5 p.m. today on the 26th. So wanted to share that and get your thoughts on that, Scott.
Well, I've said it on here. I'm all for it. Mm-hmm. Anything that helps the stocks recover from that freeze. One of my really good friends, Stephen Plant, he was down this past weekend, and he's a good trout fisherman. I mean, his head's going to blow up when he hears this, but I'll admit he is a very good trout fisherman. He knows his way around this bay. He had four or five guys down, and they all fished with him a good bit. So, you know, Plants rubbed off on them, and they know what they're doing. And they went all up and down fishing all over for 2 days and did not catch a trout. They caught a bunch of redfish. They caught a ton of redfish. And but I talked to him later on. He said, no, man, we didn't have any trout. He said, we weren't specifically fishing directly for trout, but we were fishing in areas where we should have caught trout.
Yeah, they should have been there.
That tells me, you know, something's not right. Yeah. And the gillnet surveys have shown that. And I just take a step back, man. Let's just take a break from them for a little bit and gather ourselves a little before we go pounding on them again. The pushback that I'm hearing is, well, they'll never go back to what it was. And they'll, you know, why are they doing 17 to 23? We addressed that when we had Shane on. Mm-hmm. It's about spawning biomass. It's not about that particular size fish. It's about fish smaller than 17 make up a lot more of the overall population. So we know we have those fish available. Let them spawn instead of putting them in an ice chest. The 17 to 23, it gives you a several inches of an opening. You know, I saw one guy today, well, it ought to be 16 to 20. You know, well, now you've only got a 4-inch slot and you got to hit that slot to get your fish. So they kind of made a compromise on it, you know, where they gave us a big enough slot to where you could catch three fish and have enough for dinner and still not hurt the stocks.
And one other thing that's Scott,
why I'm all for it.
Yeah, me too. Caleb, I want to ask you this because you talk to so many fishermen and guides, like what the feedback has been. How many do you feel are with us in support of this versus, oh my gosh, no, you know, look at Louisiana, that stuff, you know, versus people who are opposed to it. But I want to add this too, because I forgot to mention this. Scott posted this about from Flatsworthy, which, as you know, very much advocates and very much avid fishermen. Quote, we must consider the bold action of protecting these systems from destruction from both man and nature. The recovery period for the integrity, this is on the oyster reefs now, not just the comeback. This is the latest on saving the oyster reefs. I'm kind of combining them here. The recovery period for the integrity of the reefs, estimated to be 50 years, must begin now. Ayers and Cedar Reef must be declared zero harvest sanctuaries to prevent their further degradation and their loss of function as a baffle. The adoption of sanctuary reefs can be expanded throughout the system to ensure healthy spat, et cetera. And then he says this, or they say this, the time for action is now. So future generations have the opportunity to enjoy the coast we have. Oysters are not incidental to the habitat. They are essential. Scott, I'm going to get back to you on that because that was your post. And I know you're very tight with everybody over at Flatsworthy. But Caleb, what's the feedback you're getting on the public sentiment, the fisherman's sentiment, so to speak, on the trout limitations? And what are you, you know, what are you hearing as far as, you know, the support of the oyster reefing?
And as a whole, it seems to, you know, be a positive vibe on the limit change. There's some out there, but the thing is, I feel like the people that are really, you know, doing all the memes on Facebook and filling us with the intelligence that you get from social media, I don't think they understand what we're, you know, what pretty much what Scott said right there. I just don't think they get it. You know, they're yes, we could get better if faster, it can be done, but it's compromises were made. As far as the oystering and stuff, I don't know any fishermen that are against that.
Right.
It's, you know, especially those of us that are out there a lot and just watching those boats go out day after day, it's kind of hard to watch. So I don't know any fishermen that are against it. I'm sure there's some families out there that own oystering boats that hate it to death. Mm-hmm. But from the fishing world, I think it's a positive reaction on both sides.
And Scott, you talk with Chuck pretty regularly. You posted this. I think it's mostly his words, or at least he's one of the guys deeply involved in this. The oystering, movement. I hate to use that word, but I can't think of another one. And what's going on there?
Yeah, that letter is what's being sent to the commissioners in Austin in order to further this oyster project. Nobody's really pushing back on it except oyster guys, you know, mm-hmm. people who, you know, have oyster houses and all that. I would imagine the restaurant industry is probably against it a little bit, but most of the pushback has been what I've read. They haven't paid attention to what's being proposed. They're pushing back saying, you know, well, they're going to, I saw one post that somebody had put up and was trying to gather support for it, you know, to oppose it. And they were saying, well, they're going to shut down all the oystering. That's not what's in the proposal. They're going to shut down certain ones and make them legacy reefs mm-hmm. so that those reefs can continue and rebuild and provide spat, you know, the oyster spawn basically for other reefs in the area. One of the others was they're going to make you go to straight aquaculture. And that's the only way you're going to get oysters in the future is, you know, farm raised oysters, and those aren't going to be as good, blah, blah, blah. That's not in the proposal at all either.
Yeah.
They're proposing that you have leases that you take care of. And that's not direct aquaculture in the way that you think of it as being, you know, the shrimp farms and things like that. It's still in the bay. It's still natural oysters. It's just taking better care of what's there instead of what they're doing right now.
Right.
And what they're doing now is just flat out destroying entire oyster reefs.
All right. Let's help people catch fish with some questions specifically on fishing. But before we do that, I want you guys and girls and Scott and Caleb to just indulge me for 30 seconds here, because this is something that's pretty cool. That came out of nowhere, kind of like this podcast that I just kind of wanted to share, because we have listeners, like I said, all over the Gulf Coast. And anybody who listens and knows me either on my regular show or on this podcast knows that if I've got some off time, I'm usually fishing or I'm barbecuing, I'm smoking meat, I'm cooking, whatever. And so I want to just say this real quick, because a lot of people know that I've been making my, and you guys have had it, been making my, my barbecue sauce, for a couple of decades. And, it's called OG sauce. People have called it that. I didn't come up with the name, but I like it. And so as of today, It's going to be my buddy, Rick Martin over at Texas Star Grill Shop. I gave him some because that's how I did it. I was making them big pots at the house here, and I really love it. My kids love it. So I've given it to friends and some people at work and stuff. And everybody says the same thing, man, you got to sell this, man, you got to sell this. How can I get some more? What I hate asking you for OG sauce all the time. So I gave some to Rick Martin over at Texas Star Grill Shop. And the next time I saw him, he goes, you know, I can sell this for you. You know, this will sell, you know, this is really, really good. I said, well, I have, I've heard that. And so, he encouraged me to get it, bottled and put together and made. And I went through about four or five different iterations of the recipe to get it right with the guys who are making it. And so as of today, it is now at all four Texas Star Grill Shops, John Lopez is me, OG sauce. And so it's not, I just wanted to get it out there. If y'all want to get it, you can also get it online at TexasStarGrillShop.com. It's kind of a cool deal. It's not going to be a big money maker or anything, but it's cool to have something that I just made out of clear blue, people wanting it so much. And so we'll see. So if you want to pick up some of that OG sauce, just thank you for indulging me. It's going to be at all four Texas Star Grill Shops here in Houston, and at TexasStarGrillShop.com. Online, you can order it. And guys, thanks for letting me put that out there. I hope people get it. It's cool. It's very good. And I know you guys have had it, Scott.
I'm not going to make your head explode here, but honestly, that's the best barbecue sauce I've had. I mean, it's really good. I put it on all kinds of stuff. I even put it on my summer sausage, like sitting at the deer camp.
Yeah.
I always get that's what summer I do. Sausage.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And I use it as a dipping sauce for summer sausage. I mean, I've put it on all kinds of stuff. Hot dogs, you name it. It's good.
I'm almost out, so I gotta go to Star Grill now.
By the way, just for our friends here and you guys, I asked him to set aside about five cases just for me to still be able to take care of my guys.
I put it on tamales.
Yes.
Yeah. So all you people out there that your head explodes over ketchup, get at me.
Yeah. like my wife and some of the teachers at her school. She's a school director. They put it on like cucumbers and vegetables and stuff. So I appreciate that. And I'm just really excited. I'm glad it's there. Again, nobody's going to make a ton of money on this, but it's going to be fun to sell and nice to have out there. So you can get it at Texas Star Grill Shop and grillshop.com. All right. Here's the question. Good question. A lot of our listeners are young bucks that are, you know, hair on fire, burning across the bay, getting up before 3 in the morning and go wade fishing on some shorelines, make sure they're right. A lot of our listeners are not. A lot of our listeners either have, you know, some condition that they don't like to wade fish, some sort of age factor when they don't like to wade fish as much. And so I think I'll start with Caleb on this one. You wade fish, quite a bit. I still wade fish, but as I've mentioned on this podcast a bunch, I don't like to wade fish by myself. I just don't. I always call Caleb or Patrick or Nick or one of my buddies on the water. If I am going to be, I'm going to be right here. I'm going to be wade fishing in case anything happens. I just rather be safe than sorry. But the question is, how do I work? He said windy shorelines, but I think we can expand it to just wade fishing in general, Caleb. How to work windy shorelines without wading. Hey guys, I wish I could still wade fish, but my bad back and age make it very difficult. What's the best way to really work a shoreline for you guys if you can't wade? So Caleb, go.
Well, I think, you know, if it was the kind of weather where you could just troll down them, that's not what he would consider windy shorelines. So let's get creative here. Really, the only way that I could really think of would have to be just power poling down and fishing to them. I mean, I'm assuming this is windy, right?
Mm-hmm. Add just in general, like just if you can't wade fish anymore or don't want to.
In general, I mean, it's super simple. I do it all the time. It's drop the trolling motor and just creep as quietly as you can down the shoreline and fish well ahead of your boat to where, you know, you're not running off fish with trolling motors, bumping and grinding and all the kind of stuff that's going to happen on those shorelines. You know, that's easy peasy. That's what I mean. I get customers in the boat all the time that they don't really want to wade, but there's fish in wading territory. And, I'll fish them that way. If it's windy, I think you're in a power pole situation or an anchor situation. Power poles would be better in my opinion. because it'd be easier to, you know, move after just a little bit. You know, you trolling motor to move you over some, power poles to set you back down. And I Scott might have some ideas of how to do it a different way. That's what pops in my head, and that's exactly how I would do it.
Yeah, and if you're going to do that, you know, a lot of people aren't used to using trolling motors. Go bigger, you know, get enough trolling motor, because if you're going to do that, you're going to do it all day. And a little 12 volt trolling motor is not going to cut it for you. If you got a small boat, you know, 24 might make it. If you got a medium to larger size boat, go ahead and get that 36. Yes, a 12 will move your boat, but it won't move it all day, and it won't move it in the wind. So having enough trolling motor, get a bigger one than what you think you need. That and the, like I said, the power poles. Yeah, if you're not too concerned about the money end of it, get two power poles. That sets you up in such a way that you know that your boat sits facing the right direction. It doesn't swing around every time that you put a power pole down. I've done it where with one power pole, and I want to keep the boat sideways to the shoreline, I'll leave the trolling motor running on low and turn it back the other way and use the trolling motor and the power pole together to keep the boat sideways to the shoreline, so, you know, two or three people on the boat can cast to it.
Yeah.
Other than that, if you're going really, really shallow and you're up for it, it's not a bad way to go. And I've done it, like those little boats we were talking about. I did it on a baby cat where just hang my feet off the front end, you know, sit down on the front of the boat and walk it in shallow water. You can do that with a poling skiff. I've done it that way. Yeah, you're not truly waiting, but at the same time, you've got total boat control. It doesn't work when it's windy.
Yeah. But
back in some marshy areas where it's super shallow and you're trying to really stealth up on some redfish or something in real skinny water, it's a good way to go.
Two things that I've done. One, I've talked about a few times here on the podcast. It's hard to do with more than two fishermen on the boat, but if you have two or you're by yourself, just hopscotch it. You guys see me doing that. I do it all the time. You know, especially how I scout wade is what I call it sometimes too, because sometimes I just don't want to get out of the boat and wait for an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it is, knowing that, not really knowing, you know, that area or expecting it to, or knowing that it's going to be very fishy. Put the power pole down, cast all around the boat. And I'm talking about in real skinny water. So you can go front of the boat, real, real skinny, kind of work your way around the boat, get to the back of the boat, depending on which way the wind's blowing, and get and cast into some deeper water, and then just troll to another spot and do that. And then you just kind of hopscotch your way around that. Let me ask you if you've done this. I think, Scott, I'm going to start with you, because you probably have done this. One thing I've done when I had a boat without a trolling motor, and my first boat, I had one of those little, you know, screw-on type trolling motors on the transom, was I just putter my boat right up onto the grass and let that kind of anchor you and fish, you know, that area that way. And then I turn the trolling motor on the back out, move down, and rinse and repeat, you know, literally just kind of sliding it into that grass if it's a good shoreline, like butter.
Yeah, I mean, you can do that. Anything that makes you stop.
Right.
And that's the advantage of wade fishing, is working an area really slow and thoroughly. Mm-hmm. So anything that you can do with your boat to quietly stop you and be able to fish an area complete and thorough, anything you can come up with can work.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to another question here about the trout spawn. And I'm just going to plead ignorance here. I'll start with Scott, because this does seem to be one in his wheelhouse. Is this going to be a better trout spawn? I think both you guys have great insight on this. This is from Paul. I haven't heard talked about anywhere else. With the freeze of last year, followed by the quote Indian summer. Clearly, he was listening to that podcast, Caleb. Will that help the fisheries rebound, since we had an extended warm period? Also, do trout continue to spawn till it gets to a certain water temperature? Appreciate what you guys do, et cetera, et cetera. And thank you, Paul. So I actually posed this question to you guys, I think about a month and a half ago, when it was just starting to get into, you know, some cooler weather. with the freeze and the kind of the Indian summer that we had, a little warmer temperatures, and we really still haven't had that hard freeze, knock on wood. The spawn is just going to continue, Scott. I mean, it's just trout spawn so many times over the course of a year. But will that make for more trout that much quicker that we can notice?
Yeah, that's a question for Shane and the guys that are all into the hatchery stuff. It's my understanding that fish, like most other creatures, their spawning revolves around the hours of daylight, more so than it does the actual temperature. I would imagine water temperature has something to do with it, but when the days get to a certain length in the spring, they start spawning. I would imagine that when the days get to a certain length in the fall, it shuts off. I don't know that for sure. I do know that when I used to catch and keep a lot of trout, we would find eggs in them in the fall. Mm-hmm. But I don't really recall finding eggs a whole lot in the smaller trout in the wintertime. The small trout, they're the ones that will, continuously spawn over and over and over again. The bigger ones, I think it's fewer times throughout the year. As far as will it help with the rebound, I would think that it would, but not in the trout spawn so much as the survival rates. Mm-hmm. When you've got warmer water, you've got more photosynthesis going on, more bait fish are able to survive, and more food for the little trout, little organisms and what have you that are feeding on the plankton and the whole food chain is still continuing on. That's why during the winter we see such clear water sometimes. All that the plankton and everything has fallen out. If you see green water, like most of what I've seen here recently, it's still been pretty green. It's not that real, real clear winter kind of water that comes along when it gets cold. Mm-hmm. So I would think that the whole food chain is still going, it's still trucking along pretty good, which would indicate to me that the survivability of the small trout would be better.
The first thing I thought of, Caleb, when I saw this question was water temperature. And you're on the water all the time. We'll get to what would Scott do, what would Caleb do this week, which, by the way, it might be a really good Saturday and Sunday, but I think. But what has been your experience with water temperature? Because to me, that means if the water temperature just kind of always hovers in a good comfort zone, so to speak, for bait and spawn, then the trout are just going to be that much more numerous.
Yeah, there's whenever it's in the fall, when it's in the 70s, when it's in the spring in the 70s, everything's a lot more alive. They're not on a survival pattern. They're not on it's hot and we don't feel like doing much. And they're not on it, it's cold and we need to conserve our energy. So I agree with Scott and a lot, pretty much all of what he said, in that, whenever we have these longer falls where everything is optimal for them to do what they do, then it has to be a benefit of some sort.
What's the water temperature been like? You're on the water all the time. How's it been fluctuating?
Pretty stinking cold. It's been pretty mm-hmm. stinking cold, John.
Have you had your stupid pants on?
Yeah.
I've been wearing my stupid pants. That's not a joke for the public, Scott.
You said it on the podcast.
Oh, did I? Yeah. Okay. Yep. I've been wearing my stupid pants with three layers of stupid pants under my stupid pants. Yeah. I've seen anywhere from the upper 40s to, 60s here lately. Mm-hmm. It's cold. That clear water Scott's talking about is showing up here and there. And it happens every year. We were talking about this the other day. I don't know who we is, but I was talking to somebody. And every year in Texas, it seems like it does not get cold until the end of January here. Every stinking year. And
February is the worst. February is the worst every year. I'm not just saying that because of last year.
Yeah, no, every year. That's how it is. And I have this benchmarked in my mind because my dad was an artist and he had an art show every February that we went to. And it was always the first blasting cold that we had every February. But in November, if you think about it, we wear a hoodie in the morning and, a long sleeve shirt in the afternoon. So, the Indian summer, it did stay warmer than usual, but it got cold about the same time, I think.
How's the wade fishing been, Caleb? Because I don't know how much you've actually done yourself, but I know you're in contact with a lot of people. This is wade fishing weather. We're kind of in the thick of it now, and water temperature's down. You're wearing your stupid pants. We were talking about not waiting. Let's talk a little bit about waiting right now. I didn't really put this on the rundown, but you got me thinking here.
No, the waiting's been pretty decent. You know, the stuff that I've done, we've had good days. You know, talking to Pat, he's been having some consistency. Nick's been having some consistency. They're both fishing a tournament against each other this weekend, so neither one of them will tell each other that it's consistent, but they both tell me that it's pretty good, right?
You're telling him.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's just that time of year whenever, you know, when it gets real cold like this and then the sun comes out and warms things up, you know, they want to slide up on the edges and get warm.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
Very, very simple. It's the time of year that is going to be good. I hope it stays good. I've got a bunch of wading. I got to wear my stupid pants almost every day from February 6th forward. So,
all right. So, you know, obviously don't give details because they both listen to this podcast. Are they, I just got to believe that Captain Nick Mosley, who you've heard here, Captain Patrick Gardner, who you heard here a lot, are they telling you the same thing? I'll bet you anything they're telling you the same thing.
Well, they're on opposite teams, right?
Right.
I will say this: one cousin seems to have a better game plan than the other cousin.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't let them talk any strategy or anything to me because I do not want to be accused of any cross contamination. So, Pat and I are trying to get a new place to stay in Matagorda. That's what me and Pat talk about. Nick is borrowing my boat right now, and they broke something this morning. That's pretty much the extent of our conversation.
On brand. It's on brand.
Yeah, right?
Tradition continues.
I mean, I'm clearly not upset about it. It's just what happens.
Okay, I'm kind of off the rails here because you just reminded me of something else. I'm going to start with Scott, though. I think I might have mentioned this. Do you believe, Scott, in a fishy boat, in a boat that's just seems to catch more fish? You know, have you ever had a boat that's fishier than another one?
Offshore trolling is about the only place that I would know that it makes a difference. There's a different rumble in the motors. The offshore guys can really talk more to that, but some boats draw billfish better than others. In the bay, I think it's more about it's the nut behind the wheel that makes it a good fishing boat or not. I've sold a couple of boats to guys who could not fish.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they never did. They didn't rub off.
It was a fishy, Scott, is what it was. How about you, Caleb? You believe in a fishy boat?
I've had boats that I've done better in than other boats, mm-hmm. but I think it was just the decisions the knucklehead behind the wheel made that day. but I agree with Scott that, you know, offshore stuff, those boats were making different sounds and doing different things. So maybe that works better.
Yeah. Speaking of Scott, I want to get into some fly fishing for Sheep's Head. Another question from one of our listeners on the Bite Me group page. Since we were talking about wade fishing, I was texting with my guy Jason over at Wade Wright, and he's having a nice little vacay. He's one that's not going to be at the boat show, but we'll see if Tim is. I'll be out there. Don't forget to go to coastalfishinggear.com and get that Bite Me 20 discount code. I was thinking of that because we're going to hear from Mike Acrolic on the Knock and Tail Innovation here in just a second. So bitemetwenty.com at coastalfishinggear.com for the Bite Me special. They're taking care of our listeners. They'll be able to get you that at a 20% discount on top of already a discount on the combo. And Deadly Dudley, you heard from Paul Falgu last week on the colors that were hit, and hopefully you're getting some of those colors if you don't have them yet. DeadlyDudley.com. Also use the Bite Me 20 code and you're good to go right there with 20% off. But I was at Anglers Anonymous and I bumped into Mike Acrolic, and I started to talk about the Rattle in the Tail, which is another one that has the Bite Me 20 combo, Bite Me 20 discount at MikeHostOutdoors.com. So I turned on my handy mic that I generally keep with me and got some really good insight on how this rattle, which just seems impossible to produce, how it came about and how it's so versatile and some of the colors that he's got coming out. He will be at the boat show and he's going to have his knock and tail bar, so to speak, where you can just grab a handful and get them that way at a pretty good discount. But this was Mike Acrolic on the innovation that is the knock and tail lure. So a while back on the podcast, you heard Mike Butler and Chris Butler over at Anglers Anonymous talking about all the new equipment and lures and things that are trending, so to speak, in the industry and in fishing. And one thing he said, and I'm with Mike Acrylic from Knock and Tail Lures right now. One thing he said, Mike, was you putting that rattle in the tail was a game changer. That was his term. And I, obviously, you know, I use them. I use them in various ways, depending on the style of fishing I want, which is really the attraction for me, because you never know how a fish is going to bite. You know, you never know if it's going to be on a regular retrieve, popping it, working it. I've used it on a popping cork as well. So the masses, the Bite Me community wants to know, Mike, not just short of giving away trade secrets, because nobody, I'm sure you want to have this cornered, so to speak, but tell us the history of it and how the hell you get that in there, because it's it just always rattles. I mean, I've had mine on my rod for, you know, 15, 20 fish, and the rattle keeps working. How does it work?
Well, it's it came about probably 12 or 15 years ago. The very first lure I ever tried to make, and also make the controlled descent lures, was the, I don't want to call it a knock and tail because it didn't have a name, but it had a rattle built into the tail, and this was a long time ago. I didn't have all of the technology that I have available to me today, so the lure just didn't work. It spun like a corkscrew. It was a big lure. I had some good ideas, but it just didn't work. I put it aside and just kind of let it sit, and decided to bring it back because I thought it was a, you know, something necessary, something that can add to someone's arsenal, and it wasn't on the market. And you know, my controlled descent lures and knock and tails are something that's somewhat different than anything else out there. And for me personally, I'm not a marketing genius, and I can't compete with all these other soft plastics to come out there and make something that's exactly like everything else and try to compete with the guys that have the following. So I'm not going to do that. If I make a lure, it's going to be different. It's going to offer the customer something different to give them an advantage. And that's what I did with these. The rattle being put in there is it's very labor intensive. So these lures cost me a lot more than these other soft plastic paddle tails on the market. It's very time consuming, and there's a lot of work to it. But I think it's worth it. I think it gives the advantage, you know, to the fishermen, and, you know, just, you know, gives them something else to work on.
We're standing here in front of your display here and all the pegs that you got your knock and tails on. And I'm looking at the palette of colors, and it reminded me, so many people in this industry that I know that make that make soft plastics, they always talk about how big their palette is. I've had some guys tell me they have 90 something different colors. Some guys say they have 6 colors. What goes into your thought process in offering these colors other than what fishermen want? I mean, how does it work for you?
So originally we started with 6 colors, and those colors came from me talking to certain retailers that had an interest in carrying my product, shortly before I released it. So I went with their top 6 colors, and those were the colors I chose because they said, hey, we sell a lot of these. So I went with that. The color I used the most at the time was Pearl Lime, just a color that I like to use. So that was in there as well. After that, we expanded, and you know, with only having 6 colors, we had a lot of customers say, hey, can you make this color or that color? So I would just note those down every time someone told me, and I would put tally marks next to them. And whichever ones had the most tally marks were the ones we made next. We expanded that to 20, and then recently we expanded that to 22. And those two colors, the last two colors, were actually a request from a store, and they agreed to buy, you know, 300 bags of each right off the bat. So I said, okay, I'll make that color. And I checked around too with some other retailers, and they said, yeah, I think those colors would work for us as well. So all of my colors that I make, except for heavy metal, that's one I kind of just developed on my own. I didn't really see it on the market. I thought it would be a good color. All of the other, you know, 21 colors are requested by the customers, and that's how they come out. A lot of people say they want them, but they don't always sell that well. I would say I have probably 8 colors that are front runners, and they are way ahead of the others. Texas Roach, Chicken on a Chain, Pearl Lime, Purple Demon. Those are definitely the top all the time. You know, White Ice is up there as well. Those are the ones that are the most popular, and they're consistent through all the states that we sell in. Different regions obviously do sell other ones, but those kind of keep those colors on the top. And so you get that top tier that's not even close to who's in second place. I kind of put them in bundles of 3, And then you get the middle tier, and then you, then I've got some bottom runners that will probably discontinue a couple colors this year just because they're slow moving, and just to give the customers what they want.
That's some really good stuff, and it is interesting. We spoke with Paul Falgu, who I'm sure you know from Deadly Dudley, recently, and some of the same colors that you mentioned as your top sellers were the ones that he mentioned as his top sellers. That's Micah Krulik. Let's get back to the podcast.
All right, Scott. Fly fishing for sheep's head. You and I have had this discussion. I can't remember if we've had this on the air or not, probably, because we tend to take most of our conversations on the air here. But you're a big fan of fly fishing for sheep's head. Now, I don't have the exact question in front of me, but I know you saw it. Is this kind of like a secret? I mean, is this kind of like a little known, boy, you're going to have a blast if you can fly fish for sheep's head?
It's a challenge. Once you've conquered redfish, yeah, and we all know redfish, you can throw pretty much anything in front of them and get them to eat. Easy. Sheep's head is a whole different ball game. I mean, that's why we call them Texas permit. Mm-hmm. If you've ever gone permit fishing, it's a pain in the butt. And, you know, they will examine your fly, and any kind of critique that they can come up with to not eat it, they will.
They talk themselves out of it.
Yeah, then they just haul butt. You know, they change zip codes sometimes when you just wiggle your fly a little bit. His question was more about gear.
Okay.
You know, rods, reels, line, leader. Anything that you use on redfish is about the right same size, you know, 7-8 weight, floating line. Maybe go with a little longer leader because they are a little shy, and go with fluorocarbon leader. As far as flies go, I mean, I'm a big fan of my personal little sheep's head fly that my boys are tying for me. And it's the...
What does it look like?
It's the Convict Killer. It looks like a bug's jig. So if you're a conventional guy wanting to try this sight casting sheep's head, pick up the smallest bug's jigs that you can get. Smaller the better. And give that a shot. The guys are over at Sightcast Fly Fishing, and they started making this fly a couple of years ago now, and it's caught on. It's done really well. It's made out of rabbit fur. Uh-huh. And so rabbit fur breathes really well in the water. Now, you set rabbit fur in a static cup of water and watch it, and it just moves, you know, just with a slide. Put your finger in the water and just move it a little bit, and it almost looks like something alive. And I think that's what gets the sheep's head's attention and goes ahead and makes them decide to go ahead and eat it. But the technique is, as I've talked about on here before, throw it in front of them. Sheep's head rush over to a fly. It lands, you know, lands with a plop. They hear the plop. They go to it. Typical sheep's head, they'll run up there. And if you leave it sitting there and you just twitch it just a little bit, they're going to turn around and haul butt. I don't know what it is about a half inch long fly in the water that scares the hell out of them, but they just take off. The way to do it is as soon as you think they've seen it and they get the attention on it, before they can examine that fly, take it away from them. Do a back cast real quick. And then when that happens, they'll lose their minds and they start searching, and they're zigzagging around looking for what disappeared from in front of them. And you put it right back on the same spot again. Second time it lands, you get one or two responses. They either jump all over it and eat it, or they leave. Mm-hmm. So game's over at that point. And you can move along to the next one.
I think catching a sheep's head conventionally is a challenge sometimes, but to do it like with a fly has got to be just a huge rush.
Yeah, throwing those bugs jigs at them, that's how I came up with that fly. Mm-hmm. I was throwing bugs jigs to redfish up in the marsh, and I saw a sheep's head. Hell, anytime I see a sheep's head, I throw at it. And there was one day that I was throwing the bugs jig at them, and every sheep's head that I put it in front of ate it. I got thinking, well, if they'll eat a bugs jig was developed based off of flies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he started tying the bugs jig the way you would tie a fly. So then I just reversed the process and made the bugs jig back into a fly, and it works.
That's pretty sweet. I'm guessing you'll agree with all that in all your sheep's head fly fishing experience, Caleb.
I was on a phone call.
Caleb was leaning back in his chair like, go, Scott, go.
Yeah, get him. Get him.
Go, Scott, go. Hey, want to get to what would Scott do and what would Caleb do? I know you guys are always looking at the weather. I was looking at it. Pretty miserable this week. Caleb, I'll start with you. You know, the effect of it when we get to Saturday, when there will be, by the way, dropping barometer in the middle of the day and sunny skies. What are you reading if you have to take somebody out, let's say Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Saturday is going to be sunny. Thursday, Friday is going to be a little bit, you know, just dress appropriately weather.
Weekend, I'm taking it real quiet, going down the edges. The water should be clear on one shoreline or the other. The winds are really low. The sun's up. I'm going down the edges and sight casting this weekend.
That's exactly what I was wondering.
That's right. That's right where I'm going with it. That's what I would be doing.
Sunny day. What are the trout doing?
Well, if you wanted to wade, here's your warming. I mean, it doesn't look like much of a warming trend air-wise, but here's your sun coming out after multiple days of clouds, so giving them a reason to come lay up on the edge. I think you're probably going to have to pick an area and just really meticulously fish it because the barometer is pretty high. I think they're going to be more laying there and wanting to warm up before they really want to eat. Maybe in the evening time they might turn on a little bit more.
I think I saw, and I could be wrong, I don't have in front of me, around 1 or 2 o'clock the barometer really starts to fall.
Yeah, it reaches its peak about 9 a.m. and then about, like you said, about 1 or 2 o'clock it's dropping from 30.45 to 30.30 according to the forecast here. So, I mean, they could go to eating. I think if they did, I think it'd be a little bit later in the day. I really do. But I do think that there's reasoning for a big one to slide up and just be laying around somewhere.
What would Scott do this weekend?
The same thing. I would concentrate on afternoons. Friday. Scott's not going out on Friday. I can tell you that. I don't much care for rain, fishing in rain. I don't much care for fishing in really windy conditions. I don't really care for cold anymore.
Well, you got all three. You all hit the trifecta.
Or on Friday.
Yeah.
So the guys that are fishing that freeze out tournament, it's properly named. Anytime that you see a tournament on a weekend called freeze out, you might want to just do your honeydews. That tournament invariably brings the most miserable weather you've ever seen.
I fished it the last 2 years and I froze out of it. I'm done. Yeah. Not going to happen.
Nope. It was that bad.
Yeah. Before we started recording, I was talking to Caleb and I said, hey man, how about we jump in there and we jackpot this thing. We know where the fish are. Let's just jump in there and go. And he said, no. I mean, it was not even it was a no.
Is that the one that they're in?
Yes. Yeah, two days of it. Saturday. Yeah.
Yep. And I've had two or three different people hitting me up about, hey man, where can we go? Where can we do this? Where can we do that? And I'm like, dude, it's gonna be blowing stupid on Friday. I mean, it's
you know. Daniel texted me the other night. He said, what do you think about crossing such and such a bay? And I think it was like 33 to 38 mile an hour northeast winds. And I blew Michelob Ultra out of my nose.
What do I think? That's what I think. My plan is going to work
Saturday
like a charm.
And Sunday. Saturday and Sunday, man, low winds, less than 10 miles an hour, bright sunshine.
Yeah.
That's going to let those flats warm up. And those fish, like you said, they've been sitting here under this dreary misting. I mean, I walked outside a while ago and it was supposed to be clear and it's already clouding up again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just been a run of cloudy, cold, a little windy, a little rain. And I think that those fish are going to respond when that sun comes out.
Yeah, my plan's going to work like a charm. I'm planning on getting out there about 11 o'clock on Saturday and just fish probably till, you know, almost dark, if not dark. I mean, all those guys going to be freezing, going to the way in. I'm going to have the bay to myself, baby.
Sunday is your best bet, I think.
You think?
Sunday, the barometer's come down pretty good. It's low, it's clear. A low winds, it's clear. I think Sunday is a better shot than Saturday is, honestly.
Yeah, but I'm going to be out both days. So
Stephen Plant, the guy I mentioned earlier that was trout fishing this week.
Yeah.
He sent me a message just a few minutes ago. He said, hey, man, come on down. He's got a house right on the intercoastal down here by Charlie's. He said, why don't you come on down Friday afternoon and we'll watch all those idiots racing back to the weigh-in. Not the fish.
Watch the boat
just
race.
A rubberneck.
Just a rubberneck, yeah. A little bit.
We're just going to sit on his porch and have a few drinks and watch everybody go by.
Yeah. It's going to be every scene from every World War II movie ever where the replacements are walking and the guys that have been in the front lines are coming back and they're all limping and have bandages and carrying an arm. And yes,
we got that's that 1,000-yard stare.
That's what it's going to look like. Yep.
Don't do it. Don't go back. Save yourself. All right, boys. Man, really appreciate it. Everybody, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to hit up our guys right here. Captain Scott Noll looking really good, man. Hate to say it, but, man, you're looking good. Shoulders, you're flexing. That's CaptainScottNollPhotography.com. Don't forget that for the gear and his photos. And you've been on the water. And Captain Caleb TV, what's happening on there? I know you posted one. I watched the entire video again just for you. You posted one, I don't know if it was yesterday afternoon or this morning. But what do you got going on there?
Did you watch the one last week where I'm giving people grief for giving me grief? Because that's more up your alley.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, no, the YouTube's going good. In fact, as soon as I get done on this, somebody messaged me and asked me for a review on an SLX DC. So Cade and I'm gonna give you all the preview. Unless it goes terribly wrong, then this isn't gonna happen. Cade has never casted a bait cast reel in his life, and these things are advertised for those kind of people.
There you go.
My review is going to be me talking about it and will it work for somebody like me? But then we're handing it to Cade and we're seeing what happens because we're doing real world reviews.
That's a great TikTok idea.
Holy smokes. I was telling y'all, I think I got like 50 something thousand views this week on TikTok. I might just quit the YouTube. I feel way cooler on TikTok. People seem to care a little
younger.
More.
It makes you look younger.
Right? But no, it's rocking and rolling. The subscriber count is actually flying up this year and we're just having fun. It's the same idea, new feel this year.
Awesome. Awesome.
From what I can gather of TikTok though, you're going to have to dance and show some boobs.
Well, no, that's what I did. The only reason I'm on TikTok, and I posted one just for fun when I first got it, but I've never posted anything on TikTok. Dog TikToks are the best, the absolute best.
That, you know, we sound like a bunch of 12-year-olds sitting around right now, but TikTok will grab me for hours. And then, you know, fun fact, TikTok is now the most viewed website in the world by double over Google.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is a monster, and I'm putting up fishing stuff that I wouldn't think a lot of people would care. I put one up at noon yesterday, and at 8 o'clock that evening had 38,000 hits. If you guys are on here, it's entertaining stuff.
Do you have your phone with you?
I do.
Post a TikTok of us right here, and we'll see what kind of response. Everybody who's listening to this podcast, you're going to see the end of the podcast here. This all TikTok is going to be on Captain Caleb's TikTok. You ready?
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Here we go.
Wait. I don't know how to work this. Hold on. 15 seconds. Here we go.
Well, that's part of it. What are
we are recording the Bite Me podcast. You've got John Lopez up there and Scott Noll. There's Miss Camille. We record this thing like this. We have some really nice mics. We have webcams. We do this instead of going to the studio on every week. So come check it out.
There you go.
Now everybody knows what it's going to sound like.
Hey,
if this video flops, this is your fault, bud.
You got the sneak peek. I like to do things at the spur of the moment. You know that. All right, boys. Really appreciate it. You guys, thanks for listening. Going to be a good weekend. Good weekend of fishing, I think. You just heard them giving you all the updates. And don't forget to come see us at the boat show. Hey, don't forget OG Sauce, Texas Star Grill Shop. I promise I won't do that every week, but I'm really excited and happy that it's there. ScottNollPhotography.com, CaptainCalebTV.com, and all our friends at Deadly Dudley, Knock and Tail, Wade Wright, Freedom Boats, Boatyard, and everywhere else. You guys catch them up. We will talk to you next time.